pointing at the pursuers. "Lord Celestant," said the Lord Castellant. "Hammerhands with me!" He ran to meet the foe, 36 paladins at his side. Kallanax whirled around. More of the stormcasts were making their way into the city, driving into the rear of the ambush. From north and south, Sigmarite warhorns sounded. Vandas's host was at the heart of the attack, but the ambushers were being encircled in turn.
"Into the square!"
Vandas urged his men.
"Make formation about the statue!"
With a precision born of long practice, the Hammerhand surged forward, Ionis and his retributors to the front. They carved out a space around the statue, and the liberators locked their shields around it. Judicators came running, filling the center of the Hammerhand's hollow square and loosing their bows as they ran, joining their fire with that coming down from the ruins above. The air hissed with arrows. Prosecutors flew in formation overhead, picking off warriors who showed themselves on the roofs.
"Come out! I call on the architect of the attack!"
Vandas bellowed. Kallanax bounded around the periphery of the square, the pair of them slaying every man they came across.
"Come out and show your face! I, Vandas Hammerhand, challenge you to single combat!"
Mocking laughter echoed across the city, but no one came forward.
"Appeals to martial pride will not work here, Vandas," shouted Ionis. "The followers of Tzeentch are far subtler than those of Khorne."
The roar of battle intensified. The broad road beyond the square rang to the meeting of blades as another warrior chamber emerged from the south into the ambush. Both sides fought with skill and ferocity, and soon the gutters ran with blood. Prosecutors were knocked from the sky with lead-weighted bolas or caught by leaping savages. Vandas glowered behind his mask. Everywhere mayhem reigned. Unable to bring their full might to bear, the storm-cast phalanxes were being fragmented. Ionis held the center of the square. Vandas sent his own liberators to intercept a mob of bare-chested axemen forming a battle line to challenge Ionis's position. Knights, armored in blue and yellow, thundered out through the tall arches of the ancient Selumnite workshop. At Vandas's command, judicators broke from the back of the square, firing arrows on the move. To the mouth of each alleyway, Vandas sent a retinue of protectors. They stood no more than 5 abreast, but their whirling sword staves set up an impenetrable barrier, and they killed until the alleys were blocked by the dead. The worst was yet to come. Ionis felt it. A gathering fury rising through the ground.
"Vandas!"
he shouted.
"Death calls to death, and this place is rife with it."
Puddles of molten metal welled up through the paving. From each of these rose a spirit, running upward to make the distorted forms of men and women. The faces of these silver-skinned revenants were masks of fury, and they fell upon any they saw. Ionis cursed and set his magic to driving them back. The stormcast suffered for his distraction. A shadow passed over Vandas as a manticore swooped low, wings wide. The body was that of a huge hunting cat, but the face bore some semblance to a man's, its eyes alight with bestial intelligence. Prosecutors pursued the creature, but it jinked and dived to avoid their lightning blasts. The beast carried a cowled figure with a huge spear. The manticore stooped. Giant paws batted stormcasts off the ruins, and the spear's tip flicked out, impaling heads with each sweep. The manticore soared up, folded its wings, then plummeted down onto the pursuing prosecutors, smashing 2 to the ground. The sky was athunder with the passing of Sigmar's warriors. Vandas counted more than 12 manticores hurtling down from the tall tower. Andricus Stoneheart gathered men around him and fought to the west, while Ionis wrestled with the silvered shades of the dead in the center. Vandas rode from point to point, exhorting his warriors to do their best, hoping that the ambush would break before they were overwhelmed. In other streets and courtyards, warrior chambers gathered into tight knots of resistance. The stormcast advance halted, and all the while Vandas's gaze was drawn to the tower. A sense of building power wreathed it. The cowled manticore rider made another pass, shouting arcane words that sent black bolts searing into Vandas's men. He wondered for a moment if he were the sorcerer they were seeking, but Thostos had spoken of a horned man. Then a second voice became interwoven with the sound of the battle, coming and going, instilling the ruins with a throbbing pulse. Vandus guessed that this must be the voice of the Sorcerer Lord. He searched wildly for its source, but it seemed to come from everywhere. And then suddenly, a haunting song began, drowning out all, beautiful and terrible, a song of sorrow and rage. Silver swords shimmered into being wherever the song swelled. These shot out at speed, slicing into Stormcast and Chaos Warrior alike. The blades encountered no resistance from either side's plate, cutting through it as if the warriors were clad in soft robes. Chaos worshippers threw themselves at the swords, hoping to wrest them from the air and take them for themselves. Many died in the attempt, but a handful were successful, and with these blades inflicted sore losses on the Stormcast Eternals.
"Selimnite blades," said Ionis to his men. "A legacy of a bygone age."
A disturbance in the wind drew the Lord Relictor's attention to the corner of the square. A new puddle of molten silver bubbled from the ground, flowing upwards until it formed a gaunt female figure with hair the colour of copper. Rage twisted her beautiful features as she surveyed the carnage. She opened her jaws far wider than any human could, and her scream tore through the square, lifting a curtain of dust before it. Chaos worshippers and Stormcast Eternals staggered and clutched at their ears and throats. Ionis held his reliquary in front of him, matching his will with the maiden's song. Brilliant light flared around him. There was nothing but the screaming song and the pain and light it brought. The scream stopped as abruptly as it had started. All around Ionis' men were dead. With cracks of thunder, the lifeless bodies of his guard flashed up and away. A few lone warriors staggered about, blood leaking from their ears, but all who survived were swiftly impaled by the flying blades.
"This city is not shy of horrors, Vandus," called out Ionis Cryptborn.
But Vandus could not hear, for he was embattled 100 yards away.
"You cannot fight a curse with blades," he said under his breath.
The terrifying scream rang out again, slaying more warriors. Ionis found himself alone, and he had a clear view to the statue. There was a plaque at the statue's feet he had not seen before. "She would not yield," it said. He approached the statue. The face was racked with sorrow and pain, the same face as upon the silver-skinned banshee. Death magic thrummed strongly from the monument, and he realized then that the epitaph was mocking, and the statue not raised from any respect. Curious, he cracked one arm from its shoulder with his hammer. The statue was hollow, with dry bone trapped within. Ionis turned across the square to where the banshee wailed. He strode towards her, his reliquary before him.
"Solemnis!" he shouted. "We fight for the same cause!"
The banshee turned, her face twisting in a curious frown.
"Solemnis, hear my plea, O Queen of Blades," said the Lord Relictor.
He went to his knees and bowed his head. Solemnis's skirts pulsed and flowed across the ground towards him until she floated above him. Within the ghost, two magics warred. Ionis sensed dark spells striving to trap her and her own essence fighting back. His respect for the warrior maiden doubled.
"I beseech you, send your ire against those that earned it."
He took the blade from his reliquary, sliding it from the wired finger bones, holding it fast, and held it out, hilt first.
"This blade is a gift from Sigmar. Do you see? We fight for Sigmar."
Solemnis looked at Ionis, and she was the epitome of terrible beauty. Her hair floated in a wide halo around her head. Ionis tensed, expecting his end. Her hair reached out, taking the sword's hilt. Solemnis looked directly at him, a sad smile on her face. She screamed again, and the world was upended. A wave of anguish blasted across the square, and Ionis leaned into it as a man leans into a gale. At the heart of the shout was the whispered promise of death, sweet, beguiling words. He yearned to give in to it, to go back to his other master, away from Sigmar's wars, and to join again with his beloved. One day he would, he swore. Not today. The scream ended. The fighting stopped. Chaos worshippers stood stupidly, weapons dropping from nerveless hands. As one, Every single Chaos Warrior in the center of the city dropped dead. The Silver Ghosts rose, shrieking from the battle, ignoring the Stormcast Eternals. Silver swords hissed after them as they flew onwards to the walls of the Eldritch Fortress. Vandas was amazed. All of a sudden, his foes were dead.
"Onwards! Onwards!" Vandas bellowed. "Back into formation! To the Eldritch Fortress!"
The Hammers of Sigmar obeyed without hesitation, forming up into orderly blocks before hurrying forwards. The remaining Celestial Vindicators ignored him completely, running further into the city in search of new foes to slay. Furious, Vandas vaulted from Kallanax and onto a tumbled ruin. He ran up onto the tilted head of a toppled Stardrake statue, intending to order Thostos's warrior chamber back into the column. But as he drew in his breath to shout, his eyesight clouded, his nostrils filled with phantom scents, and his head swam. "Oh, no! Not now! Not—" A vision seized him with such blinding force it sent him to his knees. He whirled away to a different place, speeding up over the Anvroc Vale. He came to a dizzying stop, and Lord Vandas saw a waterfall of silver, frozen in time. In the sky beyond it, the silver worm Argentine coiled and fought with another dragon, mightier still. All the while, Vandas's eyes were drawn upwards, towards the top of the falls and the crucible there. He was in the air, with nothing ahead and nothing below. The vision passed. Vandas shook in its aftermath. Thunder rumbled and it began to rain. Sigmar's lightning clove deep into the city. Reinforcements were arriving. Vandas got back to his feet unsteadily and took stock. The Celestial Vindicators were gone. The area around the square was clear, but the sound of fighting echoed through the streets still. The Tower of the Sorcerer wavered in a haze of magic. He was running out of time, and made to go back down to the statue and Kallanax.
"My lord! The sky! Get down!"
shouted his knight Vexilor. The warning came too late. Four manticores rushed at him and his command echelon in the street, claws out. Three struck the Stormcasts. One was smashed into the ground by heavy hammers, but the other two raked a long, clattered furrow in the warriors before shooting skywards again. The fourth was ridden by a huge Chaos Lord and came directly at Vandas. No amount of skill or speed could stop the beast's dive. The Lord Celestant leapt to the side, but he was still sluggish from his vision and moved too slowly. A heavy blow slammed into his shoulder and a spear transfixed him. He was plucked up and carried away, the ground dropping beneath him. All his weight was upon the spear point. Barbs bit deep into his flesh. Vandas grabbed at it with both hands, fearful his own weight would wrench him into pieces. The iron shaft was slippery with his blood. Gripping it sent agonies sparking down the nerves of his arm. "Let go," part of him said. "Take brief pain and be returned by Sigmar." But then he thought of Thostos and his cold manner since he had returned, and gripped harder. A cruel face looked down upon him, heavy set and doleful. The lord sneered.
"So you were the Hammerhand. I thought you should be mightier, but here you are, speared like a fish."
"You cannot kill me,"
choked out Vandas. Speaking sent further throbs of pain across his upper back.
"We shall see. I am Lord Myrak, and I shall be your death."
"You are the servant of the sorcerer."
Myrak laughed.
"Efrix is a fool if he believes that, and you are a greater fool to say it."
Vandas gripped the spear. His situation was hopeless. Below him, stormcasts poured through the city, but the battle was far from over. Further in, nearer the shrouded outline of the Eldritch Fortress, there were more servants of Chaos. There the fight continued. Bright lines of Sigmar's warriors jeweled on every street with the followers of the Tzeentch, while overhead, lightning crackled across a darkening sky. Myrak scowled at the storm. He twisted the spear, and Vandas cried out.
"What is this fascination your god has for dreary weather?" said Myrak. "Does he think he impresses us with his lightning and his thunder? He's a bigger fool than you. Your attack is faltering, and you face but a portion of the might of this realm. I'm only one lord."
Myrak leaned over his saddle.
"But soon I shall be the only lord. I shall take the hammer.
I have been told by the Oracle himself that no mortal army can take Sigmar's weapon. What hope do you have? Vandas caught sight of a flash of turquoise at the top of a bell tower as Myrak banked around it. The Lord intended to take him towards the fortress as a prisoner.
We are no mortal army, Vandas said.
A blur of blue-green hurtled through the air from the tower. Lightning blazed all around it. The manticore jerked with a heavy impact, and Myrak turned in shock to find Thostos standing astride his mount. He dropped his spear, and Vandas made a desperate lunge for the manticore's neck. Pain punished him as he grasped two handfuls of blue mane. The manticore snapped at him, swerving sharply left. The spear dragged at Vandas's shoulder, robbing all the strength from his left arm, and he nearly let go. Thostos roared. Myrak drew his sword and raised it in a block, but Thostos's hammer shattered it and carried on straight into Myrak's face. The blow was so powerful that it obliterated Myrak's head completely. The corpse spouted blood into the wind and slid sideways in its flying harness. The manticore bucked and twisted, but Thostos would not be shaken loose. The sword in his left hand punched through the manticore's skull, and its wings folded, causing it to fall like a stone and smash through the wall of a ruined temple. Thostos stepped from the dead creature's back. He extended a hand to Vandas and hauled him to his feet. Then he took up the spear and looked questioningly at Vandas. Vandas nodded, his teeth gritted against the pain.
Do it, he said.
Vandas screamed in agony as Thostos forced the barbs out of his back. He staggered and sank to his knees. One chop of Thostos's rune blade cut the head off the spear, and with a ragged groan, Vandas dragged the shaft from his body and dropped it.
The storm hosts must see you live, said Thostos.
And there was a trace of emotion to his words that had been absent since his reforging. Together they left the temple, battered but alive. Kallanax had sought out his lord, drawn to him by their bond. Vandas mounted him with Thostos's aid and rode to the heart of the Stormcast forces again. Manticores still swooped and harried the forces. Arrows arced up at them, driving the monsters off, only for them to come back around.
Myrak is dead!
Shouted Vandas, his voice amplified by the divine magic burning in him.
Lord Celestan Thostos Bladestorm slew him! Stay and suffer the same fate!
It was enough. With several of their number dead, their king slain, and much fire coming at them from the ground, the beast riders wheeled away and flew back to their scattered domains with all the speed their mounts could muster. Upon seeing their masters abandon them, the morale of the Chaos Army broke. In ever greater masses, the bondsmen of Manticoria fled, the wrath of the Stormcasts following them upon swift wings of light. The Stormhost's vanguard plunged on towards the fortress. Vandas and Kallanax ran past them all until they were in front. The sense of magic on the air intensified, and the outline of the tower and the fortress walls blurred into obscurity. There came a soft wash of air, and a tremor set the ruins shaking. The ground quaked, and the storm host stumbled.
No!
Shouted Vandas. He spurred Kallanax into a gallop, gritting his teeth at the jarring pain in his shoulder. Buildings came down around him, ancient crystal shattering and metal tearing with mournful groans. The ground buckled under him, rising up as if turned by a plough. A fresh ridge rose up in the ruins, a wrinkle in the earth that upset the remains of the city, making them lean drunkenly on footings of broken stone. Kallanax surged up the ridge as it stopped growing, and the tremors ceased. At the summit, Vandas's worst fears were realized. The Hammerhands clambered up behind him. Ionus and Andricus arrived at his side. Not a soul amongst them spoke. Before them was a crater, wide and deep.
It's gone, said Lord Vandas dully. And the hammer with it.
So we go after it, said Ionis Cryptborn. We keep going until we find it.
But how? If some fell power has claimed it and taken it who knows where? Cryptborn shrugged.
Fear not, Lord Vandas. We will find a way.
Chapter 5 Dragon Fate Deus. The leaders of the storm hosts gathered atop the crater's crest. Tempers ran hot, and bewilderment ruled. No decision had been reached as to what to do next, and as the day grew old, none seemed to be forthcoming. Ionis did not take part in the debate. He found a block of stone to one side and sat upon it, removing his helmet to allow his pale skin to feel the sun and the sweat to dry. He remained there, facing west, as the day's shadows lengthened and the great worm shone in the evening, its flames becoming brighter as the sky darkened. When Chamon's sun had slunk past its coils and dipped behind distant Natrok, a shimmer in the air resolved into a lithe figure. Ionis stood and bowed, his hand over his heart.
Solemnis, the Silver Maiden. I give you greetings of the night. We are kin, you and I, united in death.
She said nothing but floated forward, the silver of her lower body flowing over the freshly turned rubble of Elixir. She gave Ionis a sad, lingering smile. Her face had lost its ferocious aspect, and Ionis presumed that aside from her skin of metal, she looked now much as she had in life, a beautiful, proud face haloed by red hair. She bowed her head and reached out a hand. From it sprouted a long tendril of rippling silver. It steadied itself and became the sword Ionis had gifted her from his reliquary. She took it in both hands and offered it up to him, much as he had offered it to her. Ionis took the returned blade. Its edges glimmered sharp and silver, and he marveled at the change.
Your work?
She smiled again.
You have done me a great honour, my lady.
By now others had noticed what was occurring. The arguments of the war council subsided, and the lords of the hosts turned to watch this strange exchange. Ionis carefully replaced the hilt of the sword into the clasped hands of the skeleton on his staff.
Perhaps you could do me another. I would not ask, as you have done so much for us already. But we have come to an impasse. Your efforts are important. If we succeed here, then this city might live again, and you could go to your rest.
He smiled.
Or you might linger and remain its guardian.
She tilted her head to the side, awaiting his request.
Thank you, my lady. Firstly, tell me, where has the castle fled to?
She looked upwards at the great crucible and pointed.
I see. And how might we venture there with so great an assemblage?
She smiled again and beckoned. Without waiting to see if Ionis followed, she set off west into the city. The Lord Relictor went after her, tilting his head to meet Lord Vandus's gaze. Vandus nodded and motioned for his men to follow. A sepulchral quiet was on the city, and Vandus had no desire to break it in case the maiden's magic be broken also.
Sound no trumpet and say little, Vandus said, but spread the word. The Silver Maiden shows us the way.
The storm hosts gathered themselves rapidly and said nothing as commanded. They had marched for days and fought for much of the morning, but the magic of Sigmar made them strong and unwearying. Sleep they could stave off for days if need be. And so it was, for Solemnis did not halt to let them rest, but continued westward at a steady, unhurried speed. They passed back along the Anvrok Highway, past the turn to the bright Tor gate. There Vandus sent messengers down to the encampment, and others to the entrance of the Silverway, and bade them take news of their progress back to Sigmaron. On for a dozen more miles the stormcasts proceeded, before Solemnis took them up an unassuming spur of the road into the bright Tor mountains. In this part of Anvrok there was no sign of the storm host's recent invasion. They trod secret paths shown to them by Cryptborn's strange ally. Chaos tribes that had yet to face the Stormcast Eternals launched attacks, but they retreated soon enough. Once three had been bested, the army was attacked no more. Solemnis and Ionis led the way, the others keeping a wary distance. Cryptborn could be seen speaking with the ghost and listening attentively. What they spoke of was his alone to know,
He was too far ahead for his words to be heard clearly, and from her they heard nothing at all. Before the eighth day was out, the storm hosts emerged from a narrow pass, and Vandas stopped in amazement.
"The Argent Falls," he said.
For the last 3 days, the confines of the mountains had hidden all but hints of the crucible and its strange guardian. Now revealed, Argentine filled the horizon, its coils impossibly vast. The great crucible formed a halo around Argentine's upturned head. The roar of the dragon fires that heated the crucible were loud. The mountains there rose up high, but gusting hot winds blew over them from the Drake's fires and molten silver, keeping them warm and free of snow. The Argent Falls plunged from the edge of the crucible, falling miles through the air in a wide sheet. The surface was silver, but the orange glow of smelting was visible in the folds of the liquid. Where the falls struck the rock of Anvroch, gobbets of precious metals splattered across the mountainside, and a wide area around the river's headwater was covered in globular formations of pure silver. The remains of catcher channels could be seen half buried in the metal. These ruins of industry were far below the stormcasts, who looked down onto them from a high road. Beyond the falls was a little more of the land of Anvroch. Then the mountains stopped abruptly, and the sky voids began. The road they were on curled downwards, closer to the falls, before it crossed a bridge over a ravine. Smaller roads led off to the works there, and then the main road rose up again to a township on a crag opposite the army, as ruinous as every other city in Anvroch. At the brink of the cliff, the circular platform of a dais rose up on an artfully coiled staircase. 6 statues of dragons stood around its circumference. Vandas was close to Ionis and Solemnis, and heard his Lord Relictor speak.
"A dragon fate dais," Ionis said. "How can that aid us?"
Solemnis pointed a long-nailed finger at the dais and disappeared. Vandas waited a moment before calling out,
"Has she departed?"
"No. I sense her still," Ionis replied.
Vandas rode up beside him.
"I am glad. She is a good ally."
"She is in great pain," said Ionis matter-of-factly. "This place must have been fabulously wealthy. I have seen many dragon-fate shrines, but never one rendered in solid silver."
Kallanax made a growling purr.
"Kallanax approves. This is a fitting honor to the great Drakes. Silver is favored by them."
Vandas stroked between Kallanax's horns.
"And yet, against the barbaric hordes of chaos, the protection of their old gods availed them little. There is only one god who can stand before the four, and that god is Sigmar. What would the Silver Maiden have us do, I wonder?"
"Let us consider the question upon the dais," said Ionis. "The answer may come to us there more easily, and that is where she pointed."
"We cannot all go. Look at the road. The town is small."
"We should not go alone. We have suffered several ambushes already. Summon Thustos, and let his warrior chamber come with ours. He is deeply involved in this affair,"
said Ionis. Vandas nodded. He raised his hand and horns blew. The Hammerhands and the Bladestorms came forward. Together, they went down into the valley and up into the ruined town of Silverfall. The rumble of the Argent Falls drowned out all other sound. The heat of the silver was intense, and Vandas marveled that men had lived there at all. Roofless houses and workshops stretched up the mountainside behind the crag for some way, exhibiting that mix of Duodin and mannish craftsmanship that was the hallmark of Anvroch's dead civilization. They reached the dais. The base of its supporting stair rose from a village square, and a low wall edged it, but much of it had fallen away, leaving a dangerous drop to the rocks and silver accretions below.
"Thostus, Ionis, Andricus, come with me onto the dais," said Vandas.
No sooner had he said the words than a deeper roar undercut the thunder of the Argent Falls, the unnatural grind of machinery. It came from thin air,
"To arms!"
he yelled.
"Oh, another bloody ambush," growled Andricus.
"Judicators to higher ground! Liberators, shield wall!"
All around the assembled brotherhoods, slivers of green light split the air. Green-black drills ground through each, ripping wide the fabric of reality before withdrawing.
"Storm fiends!"
said a liberator.
"Skaven!"
His warning was cut short by a hail of bullets. Giant rat-like monsters shouldered their way out of the tears in the weft of the world. Some bore multi-barreled guns in the place of fists, and they fired as they came. Dozens of stormcasts were shredded, falling to their knees before disappearing in blurs of azure lightning. Behind the gun beasts came more giants, these armed with whirring drills and grinders. They bowed their heads and charged.
"Stand ready!"
called Vandus.
"Judicators, loose!"
yelled Andricus. A storm of bolts spat through the air, felling one of the giant rat monsters. It collapsed face first into the dirt with a pitiful grunt, revealing the swollen-headed rat thing bonded to its back. This twisted rattling mewled horribly until a hammer stroke ended its misery. Liberators charged the storm fiends. Those warriors that were not knocked flying by the swipes of the creature's arms rained hammer blows upon the knees and ankles, hoping to bring the giant beings low. Vandus drove Kallinax into the fray, but the storm fiends proved more than a match for the Lord Celestant and his steed, and they were driven back under the shadow of the dais. The storm fiends grunted in recognition, seeming to single him out, and soon Vandus was surrounded by three of the things.
"Protect the Lord Celestant!"
he heard Andricus shout. The rest of the battlefield was a blur to Vandus. His attention was focused solely on fending off the hammering blows of the storm fiends. Kallinax gutted one, and Vandus smashed the shoulder of another. But there were more coming, and were it not for the might of Heldensen, he would have been overcome. Behind the storm fiends came a flood of the lesser rat men. They leapt from the tears in the world and ran for cover with preternatural speed. Once established there, they opened fire with their rifles, the force of their magical bullets punching through Sigmarite and knocking stormcasts from their feet. The noise of battle rose high enough to challenge the falls. The racket of the Skaven's hellish weaponry, the whoosh of slain stormcasts departing for Azir, the clang of weapons, the shouts of men, and a frantic chittering at the edge of hearing. Vandus parried another deadly blow. Kallinax was forced closer to the edge of the cliffs. Then Vandus saw turquoise armor amid the gold of his own men. Thostos roared, and in that war cry was something of the man Vandus had known before. He and his warriors ran full tilt into the storm fiends.
"Vandus! Vandus, we come!"
shouted Thostos. He cut a storm fiend's leg free, sending it toppling. Hammers smashed into its head and the grafted rider, bludgeoning both to death.
"Slay the leader!"
bellowed Vandus. The warlord was larger than his servants, more metal than flesh, surrounded by a bodyguard of heavily armoured black-furred henchmen. Thostos rallied his men about him and began battering his way toward the warlord, while Vandus was fully occupied deflecting the blows of a storm fiend. The next thing Vandus saw was a gout of black-green fire washing over his friend. Thostos's men fell, incinerated within their armor.
"Thostos!"
shouted Vandus, and his blows slew a further storm fiend, smashing its ribcage with a blast of energy. He urged Kallinax forward, but the Drakoth was shoved back. Another blast of fire. What Vandus saw next almost fatally distracted him. Thostos strode forward unharmed. The warp fire of the Skaven beast washed over him with no effect, and he slew the creature with a whirl of hammer and sword. Thostos pushed on for the warlord. The storm vermin bodyguard, somewhat tentatively, moved in to engage, but their halberds broke upon the Lord Castellant's inviolable skin, and Thostos struck them down in seconds. The leader fled, leaping up the stairs in fear. Andricus was close by and went after him. Vandus was now embattled with only two of the giant ratmen. Kallinax clamped his jaw around the leg of one, while Vandus battered back the second. With a mighty heave, Kallinax sent it toppling from the precipice. The second fought on. Kallinax rounded on it while it was still reeling from Vandus's blow and bit off its head. Still it fought. Whirling blades topped the stumps of its fists, and these caught on Heldensen, juddering hard until they pushed the hammer aside. The creature smashed into Vandus's injured shoulder and reopened the wound Myrak had dealt him. He cried in pain, backhanding his hammer into the beast's chest and finally slaying it. A second wave of storm fiends were emerging from the cracks between the worlds. Two came from a slit nearby, squeak roaring with idiot rage. A pair of prosecutors swept over them, blinding them with blasts of their hammers. Vandus and Kallanax leapt at them, the impact of their charge sending one of the creatures back into the hole it had come from. Vandus directed Heldensen against the second, obliterating it. Then, green lightning was all about him. A bolt of it sent Kallanax to his knees. Vandus urged him to rise, but Kallanax was dazed and unresponsive. The Stormcast looked up to see a bizarre, clattering machine bouncing down the ruined streets, spitting more lightning.
"Up, Kallanax! Up!"
he shouted. Bright white light speared down. The war machine exploded, raining wood and iron all over the town. A large wheel bounced down the street and hurtled off the edge of the cliff. From the steps to the Dragonfate dais, Ionis nodded at Vandus, the afterglow of his spell lighting his face. The ratmen were wavering. A strange stench filled the square. As one, they turned and fled, shrieking in terror. They melted into the ruins and vanished. The noise of battle ceased. There were three isolated crackles of fire. Then the roar of the falls reasserted itself. Thostus came to Vandus's side, drenched in blood. He raised his sword.
"Victory! Victory!"
Vandus cried, and clanged his hammer against Thostus's blade. He turned to raise a salute to Andricus upon the dais. Andricus raised his own blade. A final gunshot rang out. Andricus Stoneheart buckled and fell, vanishing in a blur of light a moment before he could hit the street. Vandus, Ionis, and Thostos stood upon the dais. The view over the falls from the shrine was glorious, but Vandus spared it no glance. His jubilation at their victory was ashes in his mouth. Andricus would be sorely missed in the coming fight.
"We cannot call upon the God King's beneficence again," protested Vandus. "The others look to us. We must show strength, not weakness. And how are we to speak to the heavens?"
"Call upon the Great Drake," rumbled Thostos. "These statues are raised to him."
"That was Salamnus's intention," said Ionis. "I am sure of it."
Vandus glanced from one man to the other. His eyes lingered on Thostos's cool blue stare. Would Andricus be that way when he returned? He felt a shiver of unease around Thostos, where before there had been only friendship.
"But I know not how," said Vandus.
Kallanax roared and rumbled as he prowled up the stairs to join the lords atop the dais. The Drakoth looked down upon his master, head cocked to one side in question. Vandus nodded hesitantly, unsure if he understood the beast.
"Very well. If you intend to talk with the Great Drake, go ahead. What harm can it do?"
"You must retreat to the edges of the dais," said Ionis. "The Drakoth intends to speak with his father, the Great Drake Dracothian, the first and greatest of their kind."
For an hour, the Drakoth bellowed and roared at the sky. None of the men understood his speech, but the urgency of it was arresting. In ones and twos, the Stormcast ceased combing the ruins for the Skaven and came to a halt, all eyes on the Dragonfate dais. Upon the other crag, where the majority of the army waited, the Drakoths of the other Lord Celestants assembled, adding their voices to Kallanax's roar, one by one. Darkness fell. The stars were dim against the brightness of the Silver Worm's fires, and the town flickered in their perpetual firelight. Finally, Kallanax ceased his petition. The stars grew brighter and brighter, until they outshone the fires of Argentine. The sky blazed as gloriously as those of Azir. Stars moved, and the night rippled and resolved itself into a smiling reptilian face as wide as the sky.
"My son,"
boomed the great Drake Dracothian. His voice rumbled from the mountain peaks. He could surely be seen and heard in every country of the hanging valleys of Anvrok. His teeth were the glimmer of stars, and in his coils galaxies turned.
How fair the wars of men!
Kallanax roared, his dragon tongue inscrutable. We have a boon to ask of you, mighty one, called Vandas. He stepped out from between the dragon statues, risking the zodiac beast's scrutiny. We must find the eldritch fortress that once crested the shattered city. Dracothian's regard pinned him in place. Vandas felt as a mouse must when sighted by a hawk.
I preferred it when it was Elixir, the sculpted city, the drake said.
There was a weighty mirth, timeless and savage, behind Dracothian's words.
Tell us where the fortress is, and Elixir might rise again.
A dark place, yet with a heart of light, said the beast. I saw it rise. It bathes within the crucible. Do you seek to reach it? To claim the hammer of the stars?
We do, said Vandas.
Then the sea of silver must cool, said Dracothian. The flames must go out. It has been long since I dared the worm Argentine's fires. He was among my most favored children before pride wormed into him, and Zinch's promises turned that into a canker. I will go and speak with him, for he is due a father's rebuke. Go swiftly, then, whilst his will is diverted. Farewell, noble Kallanax.
The great dragon disappeared. A cloud of lights streaked across the sky, shimmering into the west. The assembled stormcasts watched in awe. The stars halted. Constellations swirled and took on the form of the dragon again. Jaws sketched in stars, arrowed towards Argentine, and closed about his throat. The silver worm jerked. Its roar shook the mountains, carried upon an angry wind that made stormcast banners crack and icons waver. The worm's fires were extinguished, and flickering twilight was banished. True night fell. The two titans strove against each other in the sky. The underside of the great crucible was revealed entirely, the red heat glow dimming quickly, and the mountains cooling with it. Slowly, the Argent Falls solidified. A thick skin wrinkled over the silver. Great globs appeared, breaking the flow of the metal's silken appearance and rendering it ugly. The orange heat faded away, and the surface became a leaden grey in the fresh-born twilight. Hill-sized lumps of semi-molten silver slammed down, the first splashing apart with the impact, those coming later bouncing messily away and rolling glutinously down the hill, until the lumps that fell free were wholly solid. The river's flow slowed, stiffened, and stopped. The falls and river were both arrested, and the whole cooled into a solid, lumpen mass that creaked and pinged with the eerie music of metal.
Listen! Said Ionis. Solemnis returns.
The Silver Maiden's haunting song filled the mountain valleys. Hundreds of Solemnis's flying swords flew to hang in front of the frozen waterfall. Solemnis's wordless singing reached a crescendo, and the swords plunged into the metal, making themselves into the rungs of a dangerous ladder. Overhead, the Battle of Titans raged on in the sky, as Dracothian fought his wayward offspring. The Eternals gaped at the spectacle, for Dracothian had served as Sigmar's mount, and was godly himself.
We climb, then, said Thostos.
Now battle had gone, his voice had become colourless once more.
Aye, said Vandas. We climb. All of us.
Chapter 6 The Battle of the Crucible.
You seem nervous, sorcerer.
Efrix looked up from his scrying ball. King Vexos Thrond had come into his chamber unannounced again. The man was insufferable.
You are king of all you survey in the great crucible,
said Efrix. "But you are not lord of this fortress. Send word you are coming next time. I am engaged in delicate magics that your arrogant interruptions risk."
Efrix turned his back on the giant warrior king, a pointed signal that he should depart. Thrond did not. Efrix frowned.
"Do you treat all your hosts with such ill manners?" asked Thrond.
"And you treat all your guests so poorly?" asked Efrix.
"The beasts of my menagerie are always hungry, Efrix. Do not insult me."
Efrix flapped a dismissive hand.
"Your coterie of monsters from the Rim might be enough to ensure your rule of the Crucible, your majesty. But I have the support of Tzeentch himself. Be wary that I do not turn your creatures into statues of tin."
Thrond snorted and came to Efrix's side. Thrond was enormous, for he too was favoured by Tzeentch. The sale of his soul had ensured Thrond would rule forever, and the king had become more and more swollen with the energies of chaos as the years had passed. He had been the lord of the Crucible almost as long as Efrix had ruled Anvroch. The two were long-standing, if wary, allies. The Crucible king bent his horned helm to Efrix's golden scrying bowl. Efrix had never seen him without it. Deep in the vision slits, tawny eyes reflected the bowl's picture in miniature. Stormcasts ascending upon a ladder of swords, or following the Drakoths, who clawed handholds into the metal as they went.
"They're still climbing."
"As they have been for the last 4 days," said Efrix.
In the bowl, the stormcast toiled upwards without pause.
"See how they struggle. It is hard work for them. They are created for war," he laughed. "Each must weigh as much as 3 mortal men. They will be weakened when they attain the Crucible Lip."
"Yet they near the top. Do they lose many of their number?"
Thrond had a reputation for sudden fury. He was frustrated by the demands Tzeentch forced on him, and horrified at the boredom his eternal life brought. A fine jest on Tzeentch's part, but his temper put Efrix in danger.
"Sky rays dog them, but take only a few. They are guarded by many winged warriors. I have seen others grip the swords too tightly and shear off their own fingers. And those who fall will fall forever through the void. Solemnis is a dubious friend."
Efrix smiled unpleasantly. The thought amused him.
"Their force is reduced further by dissension. There was some kind of disagreement before they began."
Efrix's smile grew wider still.
"Many remained below in my land and go about other business," he scowled.
The trespassers irritated him, but there was nothing he could do about it from up here.
"How many come?"
1,000, I would say," said Efrix distractedly.
He dearly hoped Thrond would get the point and depart.
"The dragons battle still. Now that is a sight I have never seen."
Thrond grunted.
"Argentine's distraction at least provides my men with a chance for extra sport. They welcome this unlooked-for solidification of the silver. Ordinarily, we must wait for the moon's full waxing before we hunt upon the sea."
"Do not let them roam far. There will be plenty more sport soon enough, when the enemy reach the brink. They must be delayed long enough for me to effect another translocation. I'll have them chasing this fortress all over the realm."
Naturally, this was only one option Efrix had, and the least favoured. But he wasn't about to tell Thrond that.
"Do you tell a king his business in his own kingdom?"
Efrix curled his lip.
"No,"
he said.
"As it should be," said Thrond. "I will gather my army. Life has been somewhat tedious of late. I look forward to this battle. I will buy you your time, sorcerer, so you may build your power to remove your fortress from my kingdom. But remove it you will."
Thrond swaggered out. Another muscle-bound idiot. Efrix was doubtful Thrond could be killed easily, and he was far more dangerous than Myrek.
"Still,"
he mused,
"we shall see how well his strength serves him when he is trapped forever in the crystal labyrinth."
Efrix pursed his lips in thought. He supposed he ought to thank the storm hosts for dealing with Myrek.
He watched the dragons fighting, immense god-beasts tearing wounds the length of canyons in each other. The celestial dragon was coming off worse. Argentine was youthful as star dragons measure things, and invigorated by the power of chaos. That battle would not last much longer. With luck, Argentine would drive off Dracothian and melt the silver before the stormcast could reach the lip. Now wouldn't that be a fine sight, and most fortuitous? He left the bowl troubled. Somehow, fortune did not seem to be on his side. From the great window of his tower, he looked out across Thron's lands. The Crucible Kingdom was a series of islands in the Silver Sea, each capped by an ornate castle and linked by a complex set of raised causeways and bridges. Efrix had brought the Eldritch Fortress to rest upon the biggest island. Thron's own citadel occupied this island also, but jutted out from the side. He had not built it at the summit, for that lay directly beneath the Shard Gate, and that suited the sorcerer perfectly. As Efrix thought of the gate, the window showed him a jagged gash in the world surrounded by a gemstone-studded archway that glowed with a hard diamond light, for the Shard Gate opened directly into the crystal labyrinth of Tzeentch, and was the chief entrance to this realm for the god's servants. Efrix could feel the regard of the great changer coming from the gate, fixed upon him with a mixture of amusement, pride, and malice. The giant crystals around the opening glinted threateningly. Efrix shuddered, and bade the window show him the work of his slaves as they patched and mended his ruptured castle walls. He had brought his fortress beneath the Shard Gate, not only to deny the hammer to the Sigmarites, but to speed the delivery of all of Chamon to Tzeentch. For that to happen, he needed the Stormcast Eternals to attack one more time, to die and fill his copper skulls with their magic. Kairos was as likely to stop him as to aid him now, wishing to bring the prize to Tzeentch himself. They were coming to the end of their relationship. Efrix crossed his arms. Only a week ago, everything had seemed so simple. Now he had Thrond threatening him, Kairos moving against him, and Sigmar himself banging on the gate. He had to either fulfill his ultimate ambition or move the fortress by the time the Stormcast Eternals got there, and all before Kairos did whatever it was Kairos wanted to do. As he thought over his predicament, his frustration gave birth to a fresh smile. Why pledge oneself body and soul to the master of the great game if one did not enjoy playing? The board, as presented, offered a fine challenge. A great bellow shattered his train of thought. His window swerved and looked for him, finding the source. Dracothian was departing, his mighty head rising over the low hills of the Crucible's rim. Swimming through the ether, he fled ponderously upward, bleeding starlight from a thousand wounds. Efrix's window followed the Father of Dragons as he ascended high into the sky. There he vanished with a nova flash and returned to the heavens of Azir. Moments later, Argentine's flames roared anew.
"Form up!"
bellowed Vandas. A thin line of stormcast bowed outward around the lip of the falls. A horde of chaos warriors came at them.
"Protect those still climbing!"
Thostos shouted. Kallanax roared. Others of his kind answered. Prosecutors alighted on the slippery metal to drag their comrades up from the ladder of swords. Others worked in pairs, wings beating hard as they flew judicators and liberators up. A mist had met the stormcasts as the first gained the lip of the falls, but this was clearing, and Vandas had a good view of exactly what they were up against. The oncoming horde was emerging from a confusion of high towers, walkways and bridges that stretched across the set sea, linking island to island. In the far distance, a plug of rock jutted out of the metal, the plateau atop it veiled by multicoloured clouds. The Eldritch Fortress was there. Even as Vandas looked upon it, he was sure the great eye atop the central tower was looking at him in turn, as well as something on the far side of the gate that glimmered above. Master and servant regarded Vandas with uncloaked hatred. Night had come. The scarred face of the alchemist's moon was crawling along the horizon, its light glinting from plates of chaos armor as the horde raced down steps and from wharfs onto the solid silver.
Ionis!
Vandas called.
The sea warms already.
We do not have much time, said the Lord Relictor.
We must take the fight to them,
said Thostos, and strode forward.
He waits for no counsel,
complained Vandas.
Do not blame him. His wrath fills the hollows left by his death, said Ionis. Come, let us be at them.
The lords of Azir led the charge. A wedge formation of stormcast eternals from half a dozen different storm hosts ploughed into the foe. The climb had tired them all, but they fought hard, the knowledge that their brothers' lives depended on their valour giving them desperate strength. Ionis and Vandas fought close by, the magic of the Lord Relictor and the hammer of the Lord Celestant reaping dozens of lives. Many of the enemy bore terrible disfigurements and mutations. The army of Sigmar was nearing the heart of chaos in this land, and its influence was becoming pronounced. More stormcasts were coming over the brink, running to reinforce the line of their fellows. A multi-hued phalanx pressed forward, weapons swinging as one engine of destruction. Never mind that they were of different hosts and tempers. All were stormcast eternals, and centuries of training had made them brothers. They fought with a single mind. With the first formation reinforced, a second and a third were brought into being by Vandas's peers and pushed out from the falls. Thostos forged on ahead. Vandas saw him and his dwindling warrior chamber engaged by a crowd of giant mutants, more demon than man. These beasts bore blades that shone with dark power, and they cut through Sigmarite like paper. Celestial vindicators fell around them, but Thostos's skin was again somehow proof against their weapons, and he killed them with impunity. The changes in his friend were strange indeed, thought Vandas. Vandas went about the slaughter grimly. For all their misbegotten nature, there was discipline to the Chaos Army. Those sections of the Chaos Line that fell back did so in good order, towards the stairs where they formed deep ranks, keeping the stormcasts upon the rapidly warming silver, while other Chaos Warriors came around their flanks, seeking to cut off the route from the Crucible Lip. Slowly but surely, the stormcast Eternals were being surrounded. The silver underfoot became sticky and yielding, the armoured corpses upon it cooking as they sank into the sludge. The nearest stair was agonisingly close, but blocked by black-armoured warriors.
"To the stairs! Decimators! Gather together! Forge a path! Prosecutors, clear the way!"
ordered Vandas. By now the Stormcast Eternals had become more organised, falling into their allotted units as they fought their way forward. 20 decimators advanced, heavy feet snagging into the softening silver. With a cry to Sigmar, they charged. The warriors in the front rank struck down the enemy before them, then peeled away to the back of their retinue, allowing the axe of the next warrior to hit, so that they kept up a flowing charge that penetrated deep into the chaos warriors mobbing the stairs. Prosecutors blasted those enemies trying to reinforce the weakening regiment, and suddenly the decimators were through. They battled up the stairway, their fellows coming after them. Nearby, Thostos roared out a command and led his own decimators in a similar endeavour up another stair. Other Lord Celestants followed suit. Once upon the road, they joined forces and pushed on towards the first tower on the network of causeways. Kallanax bounded up the stairs, and Vandas urged him to the edge of the road so that he might see how the battle went. He cursed loudly, for the majority of the storm hosts were still embattled on the Silver Sea. Streams of molten silver were opening up between the fragmenting surface. Large chunks of the surface sank abruptly as the silver underneath turned liquid, dragging down Stormcast and Chaos Warrior alike. The air whooshed and banged to the departing energies of men he could ill afford to lose. A pair of diabolical voices rolled out over the conflict, delivering orders and rebukes in a dark tongue.
Ionis!
Shouted Vandas down to the Lord Relictor.
Make haste!
Though scores of warriors had fought to the stairways and beyond, the rest were still intermingled with the Chaos Horde. Perhaps a tenth of their number would make it through before the sea baked the rest in their armour.
There are too many,
shouted Ionis Cryptborn, raising his reliquary.
I shall forge a path if I can, for Sigmar and Azir.
There was a crash of thunder, and a colossal bolt of lightning shot from the skies to slam into the Lord Relictor. It coursed through him, shooting through the molten silver to turn every Chaos Warrior within 100 paces to scorched meat. The Stormcast Eternals were invigorated by the divine bolt. Finding their passage suddenly unbarred, they surged for the walkways by the 100. Cryptborn came last, sinking further as he struggled onwards. A giant Chaos Warrior, clad in golden armor and carrying a huge axe, waded after him. Ionis reached the bottommost step of the stair before the surface collapsed and slid under a roiling swirl of molten silver. The Chaos Warriors howled in agony as the sea took them.
Ionis!
Vandas called.
To me!
Ionis never made it to the top of the stairs. The giant in gold hauled himself from the silver, steaming with the heat. He swayed upon the bottom step.
Ionis, beware!
Roared Vandas. But it was too late. The giant leapt, his axe swinging into the Lord Relictor's head and splitting it neatly in two.
Ionis!
Vandas cried out. He slipped off Kallanax and ran to the stairs. A trio of prosecutors stepped before him, their sword staffs blocking his way. He made to shove past them, but they pushed him back. Below, Stormcasts pressed forwards, and the golden warrior was cut down, landing on Ionis's corpse. The prosecutors placed their hands upon Vandas's shoulders, gently restraining him.
No, my lord, you must not go to him.
A crack of thunder, mightier than all the rest, split the sky. Ionis's mortal form transmuted into a blazing spear of lightning that rushed upwards. Where it pierced the sky, black clouds wheeled and flickered with power. Ionis Cryptborn departed the realm of Chamon.